It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling loafers or peace lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business calls library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.
But I think you look at a guy that has, you know, excellent bats of ball skills, really good on base ability, works at bats, is really cerebral about his at bats, and he probably has more power than Bregman does.
Time to hit the St. Louis Cardinals top prospect. This is your BA prospect profile. The name is JJ Weatherholt. It's Scott Braun with JJ Cooper and Jeff Pons from Baseball America. But Jeff, you start by telling us about the JJ that the St. Louis Cardinals have and felt very fortunate to pick in last year's draft. Some thought he could go number one overall, and the Cardinals were like, whoa, we're at 7 and we land this guy.
Yeah, this was one of those kind of all-time draft slides, I think. I mean, we'll see if the proof is in the pudding here, but this is almost like a guy that could have gone number one in the NFL draft. I think about like Aaron Rodgers sitting in that room forever in that draft and Smith going one and then him dropping down the board. It kind of almost felt like that with Weatherholt. We had heard rumors prior to the draft as early as that morning that the pick could be Weatherholt instead of Bizzano at one. I think you kind of look at some of the Guardians' tastes, and Weatherholt fits that. And what do I mean by that? Weatherholt has a great combination of skills. He's an outlier sort of bat-to-ball guy, has excellent approach, and there's some impact there as well. But this is a guy that, you know, was the batting champ of Division I baseball as a sophomore, dealt with some injuries as a junior. But I think we're going to really see Weatherholt in sort of all of his glory again in 2025. This is a guy that was getting consistent 55 to 60 run times from scouts across the industry. And I kind of circled back and pulled some guys that had seen him in the summer and sort of late fall and said, is he running better now? What's going on? And the run times were back up, which was great to see. But I think you look at the all-around player here, it's somebody who could maybe profile at shortstop or multiple spots in the infield, maybe isn't a shortstop long-term, has the tools to profile at third base or at second base, certainly has the bat to fill in at third base. And the comp that I've typically put on him is very similar to Alex Bregman in terms of the player. They're a different mentality, but I think you look at a guy that has, you know, excellent bats of ball skills, really good on base ability, works at bats, is really cerebral about his at bats, and he probably has more power than Bregman does, but maybe not as clean of barrels as Bregman catches, which is kind of his superpower. But it's a similar type of player, and I think could maybe in the end we could be looking back in 5 or 6 years and say this is the best hitter that got drafted this year.
I think the other similarity you can pull here is when Alex Bregman was drafted, it's like, well, where is he going to play? And in his case, it was like, well, you're not going to move Carlos Correa off a shortstop. I think the kind of same thing applies here. Weatherholt should move really quickly. He's not going to move Mason Winn off shortstop either, because Mason Winn, that's kind of his calling card and that absolute railgun of an arm. But that versatility, that batting ability that Weatherholt has kind of makes it where this isn't a problem, because you would love to have a plus defender at third to go with a plus defender at short. That's kind of the dream scenario. Let's be honest, the Cardinals kind of have had a lot of guys in recent years. Obviously, Arenado is not an example of this, but no, they've had a lot of guys kind of playing up at positions where they're a little bit stretched. You look at Nolan Gorman, you look at Jordan Walker, you look at a couple of these positions where you look at really a catcher with Contreras last year, or at least that's what they kind of clearly felt like afterwards. They need a little bit of help on the defense, and I think that Weatherholt fits in that very well, that ability to play third. I think he could probably play second if that was the position they needed. Probably is going to be more of a need at third in the short, medium, long term when the Cardinals are, you know, kind of clearly saying that Nolan Arenado is not their third baseman of the future. I do think that he could move quite quickly. And I think the other thing that really does stand out is the Cardinals needed something like this to happen. They need kind of guys, a new kind of young foundation to build around. Wynn can be part of that. Weatherholt very much can be part of that. They do also have kind of some arms like a Tink Hentz that really you're just hoping for durability and health. But Jeff, I think that it really kind of does stand out that the youth movement that started last year in St. Louis, Victor Scott hopefully becomes a part of that as well. We may see a lot more of that in 25 and in 26, shouldn't we?
You listen to some of the things that were coming out of the winter, like warm up or whatever the heck they call it there in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. I was kind of tuned in. They had Sajacy, they had Jordan Walker and some of these other guys talking. Mazelik had kind of really, really leaned into the Arenado trade, that it's sort of priority 1, 2, and 3. That opens up a spot for Weatherholt. I know that they kept him at Palm Beach to start the season. There was no reason to sort of force him up. Some of that was roster restrictions. It wouldn't shock me if he starts the season at Double A Springfield. Once you're in Double A, you can move pretty quickly. A mid-season ETA on Weatherholt, if they're able to move Arenado and they're kind of leaning into that youth movement and a little bit of a slide back bridge rebuild type of year, it wouldn't shock me if Weatherholt moves that fast, especially when you consider, you know, how advanced he is as a hitter. Kind of going back to this Bregman comp, that's how Bregman moved. If you remember, you know, that first half of that season, Bregman was crushing the minor leagues. They had to keep moving him up. He kept on producing until, you know, he forced his way into the major leagues by the end of that season. It wouldn't be unremarkable to see Weatherholt have a sort of similar trajectory and move next year.
The other thing I think that we do want to note here is that if you look at the Cardinals, it's not the best farm system in baseball right now, but it definitely, Weatherholt helps this a lot. Yairo Padilla, who's kind of a name to kind of file away, a little ways away, but a really interesting prospect who will probably be coming to the States this year. They do have kind of some of these guys to kind of filter in where they've got a little bit more of a higher impact bat. But concern I may have is, are there the higher impact arms to go with that as well? Or has that kind of been a little bit of an issue for the Cardinals?
Well, I think this is probably the first time that you can look at the top of that list and say, hey, there's some power pitching in the Cardinals organization. It's been a long time since you've been able to say that, probably harkening back to the days of Jack Flaherty at this point. But you look at Quinn Matthews, our minor league pitcher of the year in 2024, the big jump that he took. There's not many left-handers that have that fastball profile, that throw that hard, that also have two above average secondaries and have a track record of handling innings. I think that's a pretty good arm to have up top. You have Tink Hentz. He's got some durability concerns, but in terms of being electric, the man is an electric factory. When he's on the mound and things are right, he is as exciting of an arm to watch as anybody in the minor leagues. And the sleeper here is Tekoa Robey. He's dealt with some injuries. He's dealt with some ineffectiveness over the last couple of years. I do think he's a guy that the organization believes in heavily. And if you look at some of the pitching development stuff that's going on in the background, some of the things that Chaim Bloom has been tasked with, I think as a Cardinals fan, you probably have to enter this season with a little bit more hope regarding the pitching development and what could be coming up through this system. Because the pitching's the issue. If you look at that lineup, it's all homegrown at this point, and they're really just waiting for someone to take a step forward into superstardom.
I want to end with this, with a more global look at the team. JJ, I mean, this might be a whole topic of its own that we hit at some point on Hot Sheet, and I encourage everyone to watch the show. But I think the two things that bother Cardinals fans as far as development right now are, one, Jordan Walker has not developed into anything close to a star yet. And two, the report from Katie Wu in The Athletic about how they really dumbed down a lot of their instructional coaching development, all that kind of stuff. They used to be kind of a leader on that front. So your thoughts on that whole view of the Cardinal system, and if you think that's going to change?
I do think that's what Chaim Bloom's job is this year, kind of as his get ready to take over everything. But first you need to help us fix this. And the thing that just jumps out with that is, We talked about Nolan Gorman, Jordan Walker, you know, these guys who are kind of playing at the upper ends of their position, you know, defensive spectrum where they could possibly play. And that used to be the Cardinal strength. But if you look at it in recent years, it is kind of hard to say that the Cardinals have stayed on the front end, on the cutting edge of player development. they have had a number of these guys who, in some cases, I would say also the MLB development of these guys kind of seems to go backwards. Dylan Carlson was better as a rookie than he was in year two or year three, and then he's kind of out the door. Again, maybe this is what Matthew Liberatore is, but Matthew Liberatore has not really taken a step forward since he reached the major leagues. Jordan Walker has not. Nolan Gorman had a pretty good 23 and then kind of really took a step back in 24. They need to see some of these guys take those steps and get better in the big leagues. Victor Scott, hopefully. Victor Scott just really struggled in his debut, but they need some of these guys to kind of regroup and then get better, not just kind of keep getting worse year after year.
All right, well said. And if you want more on the Cardinals, of course, we cover them on Hot Sheet. Encourage you to check that out. If you want more on a different team, we release one of these every day during spring training. So come back to the Baseball America YouTube channel, get yourself a BA subscription as well at baseballamerica.com, and we'll see you for another prospect profile.
Shaw will hit for a high average. He's also going to walk more. And as I said, this is a guy that does know how to elevate, does know how to hit the ball hard in the air to his pull side. Matt Shaw is the top prospect for now in the Cubs system, as he could be a big contributor to this team in 2025. Let's hit a prospect profile. Scotty Braun along with Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce. What do you think, Jeff? Matt Shaw, a Rookie of the Year candidate in the National League?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, the odds-on favorite prior to probably Rookie Sasaki signing, I would say that's probably, you know, the two of those guys, certainly from a positional player side. I think Shaw falls squarely into that category. There were some off-season moves made, of course, that Kyle Tucker trade not only added Kyle Tucker to this lineup, but also freed up a spot by trading Isaac Paredes and then also Cam Smith, who was behind Shaw in the pecking order in terms of when he would get to the major leagues. But competition at third base. And I think you can look at sort of this lineup right now. Roster Resources had it projected as Matt Shaw as the potential starter for quite some time. And I think when you look at the upper minor success and just the track record of this player, it's pretty easy to see why the Cubs would be so invested in this player and believe that he would be able to sort of handle it. We heard talk coming into 2024 that Shaw was spending the offseason working out at third base, not at second or shortstop, where I think a lot of us had projected he would end up long term. This is also a guy who has a long track record of hitting against high level competition, dating back to when he was in high school, dating back to when he was the Cape Cod League MVP, and really sort of ran the table from beginning to end in terms of the best player in the Cape Cod League in that summer. Won a championship with Bourne. He's a big time player, ultra competitive type. I think in some ways probably compares to Alex Bregman in that sense. Not the defender that Alex Bregman is, but I do think he has some other tools, particularly physical, that Bregman doesn't have. He hits the ball harder than Bregman ever has. This is a guy that does have sort of 20-20 upside. He's quicker and a better base stealer, and actually has base stealing acumen that I think goes above and beyond just his sort of home to first run times. Really knows how to read pitchers. He's a very cerebral player. Kind of guy that, you know, if you watch Cubs games every single day, you're probably going to fall in love with this guy.
I can't help but just think about the fact that when you look at the Cubs and you look at kind of one of the ways that they have had success over the last decade, they had the wave that obviously led them to the World Series. But after that, they've always kind of loved drafting their productive college infield bats. Now, Ian Happ kind of always faced some questions about whether he was going to play defensively, but he always could hit. Nico Horner kind of followed after that. I kind of also view Matt Shaw as maybe a slightly better version kind of following in those footsteps, where you're talking about these guys who have a long track record of production at the upper levels of college baseball, you know, top level programs, who then go to the minors and do the same thing and just kind of earn that being plugged in, like, okay, you're the guy. We're not counting on you to be the star from day one, but at the same time, you're a regular from day one that you arrive, and let's see if you can blossom into kind of being a cornerstone piece and at worst kind of a very good complimentary piece. Jeff, when you kind of look at Shaw, speaking of for Cubs fans, like comparing him to guys that they know that have been up on the big league club already, if you compare him to say like a Nico Horner, how's he different? How's he better? How's he worse?
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to see Matt Shaw put up the sort of valuable defensive seasons that Nico Horner had put up when he was playing shortstop prior to Dansby Swanson coming over. Now he's one of the best defensive second basemen in baseball. It's a really talented defensive middle infield. So he's not going to have the same impact on that side of the ball. the other side, the big question, I think, dating back to when Horner was at Stanford and sort of one of the last sort of remaining guys with that Stanford swing, he likes to go inside out. It's, you know, keeping the ball in the ballpark, hitting them where they ain't. That is not Matt Shaw's game. Shaw can do that. Shaw will hit for a high average. He's also going to walk more. And as I said, this is a guy that does know how to elevate, does know how to hit the ball hard in the air to his pull side. And I think, you know, Wrigley is probably the perfect sort of park for him, where it's not super high fences. They're not super deep out there. There's certain days where the ball travels a little bit more. And I think that, you know, you're looking at a player that has more like 20-30 upside, when Horner certainly had the stolen base acumen. We've seen that time and time again throughout his professional career. But is a little bit more of like a speed, contact, and defense guy, where I view Shaw as, you know, more of like a 2-3-4 hitter ultimately.
All right, so I'll spin us to a global approach here on the Chicago Cubs farm system, JJ. Seems like it's pretty good, especially on the position player side, and we might even get ourselves a little bit of a logjam at some point if some of these prospects do work out. Is that fair to say, and do you feel like Matt Shaw will be the first here in a litmus test to see how that goes?
I would say that's completely fair to say, and I would say that if you look at the outfield, I feel like that the log jam's here. We've seen Owen Casey is that, I'm not saying that Owen Casey couldn't use a few more at-bats in the minor leagues, but Owen Casey's knocking on the door. Kevin Alcantara, you know, is knocking on the door. So these are guys who have already reached the upper levels of the minors. And if the Cubs were earlier in this rebuild that they'd never have called a rebuild, I would say that you might just say, okay, that they're just going to plug in it and get at-bats. But you look at this team right now. I mean, that's why the Kyle Tucker trade was made. You got Kyle Tucker. You've got Pico Armstrong. You've got, you know, we talked about Happ. You've got, say, a Suzuki. You've got a number of guys where I think Shaw is very well positioned here, because he's kind of they've kind of cleared out a spot for him just to take it. But now going forward, they have a lot of guys who already have double A, already have triple A time. But Jeff, when I look at it, who's the next guy up? Who's the next guy who can really, like, there's a clear path, or who is it pretty much everyone else going to be waiting for an opportunity, whether it comes by injury, whether it comes by trade, ineffectiveness, whatever it is?
It's probably, you know, of course, Shaw is number one. I think he's the one that has the clearest path to playing time. But when we talk about the more global picture of the system, it's probably Cade Horton. If Cade Horton can show that he's back, he's healthy, he gets, you know, some of that feel and shape back on his fastball and his slider, and can really be sort of that nasty two-pitch guy that we saw, he could fit into a bullpen role. He could be a spot starter guy, somebody that fills in for an injury on the rotation. I really think when you look at this logjam in the outfield, it's going to have to be an injury to one of those four guys you just mentioned. They made a big trade with Tucker. They're going to play that guy. And then you have a bunch of productive major leaguers, and then a young, outstanding defensive center fielder in Pete Crow Armstrong. It's tough for me to imagine that any of those outfielders are going to be up. I think there's maybe even a chance that between now and the beginning of the season that we could even see the Cubs swing a trade and maybe move one of those outfielders or a couple for an upgrade somewhere else in the roster. I think the dark horse here, though, is probably Moises Ballesteros. If he takes a step forward in terms of his receiving and sort of catch and throw elements behind the plate, the bat is there. It's a mature hitter, a guy that doesn't give away at bats. Bat to ball skills are elite. I mean, you could see it in game, but we were at the Futures game last year when they were doing some of those skill competitions, and there was really nobody who had the level of barrel control amongst some of the best hitting prospects in baseball that had that level of barrel control that Ballesteros showed. So I think just as a catcher and ability to play some first base, maybe there's some opportunity there, but it is a true logjam with these outfielders. And I think, you know, if you're Kevin Alcantara, who debuted last year, or Owen Casey, who spent the full season in AAA, you're kind of like, if I was in, you know, 20 other organizations, I probably am in the major leagues at this point and looking at entering the season with a full-time job.
One last question on that, though. When we talk about Casey, when we talk about Alcantara, are those guys ready right now? Or is it like, is there one of these guys who you would say is basically, there's nothing left for him to prove in the minors? Because I kind of feel like with, other than maybe Matt Shaw, all these hitters are guys who might benefit from another half season or more in AAA.
I think you can make the case for Casey. He's had a lot of upper minor success. I think you saw how he sort of evolved last year, and particularly in a more challenging environment. Now, the strike zones and all that sort of thing, we can quibble about that in AAA, but he's facing better competition. He showed improvements as a contact hitter, as well as his approach. We know he has the underlying power. It's just a matter of sort of getting to that in the best possible way in terms of batted ball angles, consistently hitting the ball in the air to his pull side, and getting the most out of those big EVs and that big power that he possesses in his body. He's a good corner outfielder. I don't know that there's a ton more experience that he needs at the AAA level. I think it's really going to be the litmus test of how does he adjust once he is challenged by the best pitchers in the world. Alcantara, on the other hand, has less time. Elite defender in center field. If it wasn't for Pete Crow Armstrong, he would probably be the best center field defender in the organization. He's a great athlete. I still think that, you know, 300 to 400, 500 plate appearances at AAA are probably going to do him some good.
So we know, at least for now, until that status goes away, and Cubs fans are hoping that starts right on opening day, where he becomes a big leaguer, Matt Shaw is the top prospect in the organization, according to the smart minds over at Baseball America. We're going to keep doing this every single day. We'll release another top prospect video here per organization. So come on back or keep scrolling through if you missed any, and we'll see you for the next one.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Name anybody. This guy is really special. And like I said, if he was an American, he'd probably be the number one pick in the draft going away.
The top prospect in the Milwaukee Brewers system is Jesus Mate. Here you go. We're helping you out with the name. And now we've got some information for you, too, as we hit a prospect profile. Scott Braun, along with Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce. So let's dive in, gentlemen. Jeff, Jesus Mate is the name that we might not hear in the big leagues anytime soon. But I do want to remind everyone how much of an impact Jackson Chirio made at such a young age in 2024. So do you have an ETA in mind? And what do you think about this prospect?
Yeah, I'm probably about as excited about Jesus Mate as I've been on any player coming stateside in the last 5 to 6 years. You know, it's really was elite stuff in terms of what we saw last year in the DSL. I think it was a 169 WRC plus, 69% better than his competition. The underlying data is really good, and we'll probably chat about that in a little bit. But I'm thinking, you know, we're probably looking minimum 2027, comes over this year, even if he sort of follows that Chirio path of jumping both A ball levels and, you know, skipping over the Arizona Complex League, which I think is totally reasonable and probably possible. Then it's double A, triple A the next year. Maybe he signs an extension and, you know, we sort of see him in 2027. I would say that would be the earliest. That's probably still somewhat optimistic as this player, you know, a year ago was just 16 years old and wouldn't be eligible for the draft as an American player until this year. So kind of puts into perspective just how young he is. But, you know, I know JJ and I have discussed this player quite a bit. He was a hot name during our top 100 process. And, you know, of course, our number one Brewers prospect in a pretty dang good system.
This is why we send someone to the Dominican Summer League and go to the All-Star game and all, is to see guys like Jesus Mate and to come back and say, man, everyone down there is raving about Jesus Mate. This is really kind of how you draw it up. Like when we talk about, it's hard not to compare him to Jackson Chirio, even though Churio's an outfielder, although he was a shortstop as an amateur, but an outfielder, you know, for the Brewers, whereas opposed to Mate should stay in the dirt. But the reason it's kind of not, it's hard not to compare them is that this is that kind of that ceiling, that kind of potential impact where you look at Mate and say, okay, this is a player who really could have some pretty special bat to ball skills, power for his age, strike zone discipline, all these things that are usually kind of the things that you add as you mature, as you kind of get more at bats. Mate already has a lot of those. Now, I don't want to go overboard on this. He's a teenager who's yet to play in the U.S. So this is not something where he's knocking on the door and goes to spring training going, I'm going to show those Brewers and find a spot in the big league lineup or anything like that. But it does kind of explain why he could be on a faster track than most, much like what we saw with Jackson Chourio, who skipped over, went straight to low A to Carolina, and then kind of showed he was too good for that league. So he kind of earned a Midwest League assignment, gets to double A the next year, turn around, he's in the big leagues before you know it. Barring injury, if he keeps it up like he's done so far, that's something that you could also see kind of that kind of track with Mate. But the other thing I would say with this is how the Brewers, this is one of the explanations for why and how the Brewers have kind of managed to stay at the top of the NL Central year after year, even though they don't really have a whole lot of financial advantages or market advantages over the Cardinals or the Cubs or some other teams in that division. But they've been really good on the international market. They've been really good at hitter development. They've been really good at pitcher development. And Jeff, I mean, you just put it all together. They're kind of rocking and rolling here as far as just year after year after year. This is putting him number one wasn't easy because this is a system that has a number of guys who are very plausible number one candidates.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have a task that we do during our top 100 coverage. Go and check that stuff out on the site. But one of my favorite articles that we work on every year is who could be the number one prospect in 2026. And when I came into this and, you know, was thinking about writing to this article, there was no other option for me. It was pretty much either Sebastian Walcott that I knew other guy was going to write about. But for me, it was Jesus Mate. And the reason that I say this, I think if you're going to put a player comp on this guy, it's probably like Ronald Acuna if he could stick in the infield. It's that sort of level of otherworldly skills. And there's probably even a case to be made that he's more advanced than Acuna was at this point. There was one player throughout the entire minor leagues, and I think this really showcases his dominance, that had this trio of numbers: a miss rate below 12%, a chase rate below 15%, and a 90th percentile exit velocity of 104 miles per hour, which, by the way, is major league average. He did this when he turned 17 a month prior to the start of the Dominican Summer League season. It's just so outlier, and I think it sort of showcases just how dominant he was. There was no player in the minor leagues that, from an underlying data perspective, was more dominant in 2024 against his average age of competition than Mate was. That includes Christian Campbell. That includes Roman Anthony. Name anybody. This guy is really special. And like I said, if he was an American, he'd probably be the number one pick in the draft going away and setting like bonus pool records. He would probably beat Charlie Condon and Chase Burns numbers. It's just that outlier. We'll see how it translates when he comes over at first, but haven't looked at DSL data going back years. I've never seen anybody that approaches this, including guys like Junior Cameron Arrow.
Okay. Now I want to provide because we've got everyone very understandably heated up about Jesus Mate. So now before we wrap this up, I want to kind of pour a little bit of cold water, just tamp it down a little bit. There's a reason he's not our number one prospect yet. Jeff, what would be a scenario where it's like, okay, because we know the DSL, the tricky part of the DSL, hitting the ball hard, not chasing, all these things are really good. But we also know that that league is much more uneven, I would say, than like a U.S., like a full season league especially. It's really hard to nitpick Jesus Mate right now. Maybe he's not a shortstop long term, but is there something, Jeff, that you look at and say, okay, this is what could slow him down, other than injury, what could slow him down in 2025 as he continues his ascent up our rankings?
I think, you know, just probably optimize batted ball contact. And we're looking at how often is this guy going to put the ball in the air? How often is he going to hit the ball in the air to his pull side? Could get some bad batted ball luck. He does still hit the ball on the ground a fair amount. A lot of his hardest hit drives are still on the ground. You know, technically that leads to higher batting averages, but it could maybe call into question what the overall power upside is and put them more in like that 18 to 22 sort of upside range for home runs versus the 30 plus that we look at when we see a kid who's 16, 17 years old hitting balls as hard as the average major leaguer on a particular metric. So I would say that's probably the big one. The other one is, you know, if the defense does continue to slide down, and it's more of a question of can he stick in the infield at second or third base? I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's really more of a question of is he an everyday shortstop, which, you know, when you think about there's only 30 of those jobs in the entire world, there is obviously a very high threshold you have to meet in terms of defensive ability to stick there. So I think those are the question marks. There aren't many guys that I go into every year where I'm like, 3 years from now, this guy's going to be a superstar. And I really do feel that in terms of my gut, but also my head when I look at sort of all the pieces of the puzzle and how it comes together.
You know, my job is to take the glass half full, listen to that and be like, did we just find the next superstar coming up to Major League Baseball who could be a rookie of the year a couple years from now and show us, you know, what Jackson Churio did, who will be a seasoned vet by that point. So it could be Jesus Made Jackson Churio. And if you actually spell that out without knowing how to pronounce the name, it would be kind of interesting. So anyway, this is going to be very, very fun for Brewers fans if it pans out the way that they think it could. Okay. So obviously you need to stay locked on Baseball America coverage. Get yourself a Baseball America subscription so you can follow this storyline and either say, I knew about this a while back and expected this, or, you know, you can get after us a couple of years from now too. So thanks for watching this one. That's the top prospect right now in the Brewers organization. And we'll see you for more of these as we go team by team.
Chandler could really ascend to sort of that number two role behind Skeens in the next couple of years. He's a bigger guy. He's super athletic.
We're hitting the top prospect in the Pirates organization, according to Baseball America. It's called a prospect profile. It's a fun name too, so you want to see him thrive. Bubba Chandler in the Pirates organization, just pitching. JJ, what do we have here? A potential number what in a rotation if it all pans out?
Okay, you could say a two. This is the Pirates, so like I think the Pirates would be thrilled if he was their number three this year or their number four even, because let's give credit to the Pirates on this one. Paul Skeens, Jarrett Jones, Mitch Keller. If Bubba could be their number four, that's a really good rotation. Okay, it's maybe not Dodgers rotation, where it's like if you must have Cy Young votes to enter this rotation, but it is really good. And Bubba fits very well in that. Like, it is not something where when we talk about those guys that you would say, oh, Bubba Chandler is the kind of the outlier of that group. No, I think if it all comes together, it wouldn't surprise me at all. He's not going to be Paul Skeens. If Paul Skeens is healthy, that's your ace. But if you told me that Bubba Chandler ended up being the number two on this staff and Jarrett Jones kind of slots behind him, wouldn't shock me. You got to give Jones the credit for he's already done it at the big league level. Bubba hasn't. But Jeff, when I look at Bubba Chandler, I see a whole lot here to think this guy could be a rotation fixture and a really kind of impactful rotation fixture for years to come.
When I was sort of going through the process of doing my annual best pitches in the top 100, there's a lot of candidates for best fastball, guys like Chase Dolander and others that throw really, really hard with great movement, had great results throughout the season. When you look at the combination of factors on Bubba Chandler's fastball, 95 to 96, can ramp it up to 100 miles per hour when he needs it. He's got, you know, above average induced vertical break. He's getting above average horizontal break. And he's doing all that from a really low release height. It's almost similar to like a Garrett Cole sort of fastball in terms of the movement profile, but also those release traits. And those release traits are important because they portend deception and the ability for hitters to not be able to get on plane with that pitch. And oh, when it's sitting 96 to 97 and can touch 99, 100 miles per hour, it takes them even longer to adjust to that. There's probably some stuff that can come along in terms of what the slider is. It's kind of a hard cutterish slider. There's been some questions from scouts as to how well he manipulates that pitch and how frequently he lands it. That will be a question that will be answered at the major league level. And then he has a pretty good changeup as well that plays well off of the fastball. So it might be more of a fastball changeup sort of first profile, which obviously is going to put him in a good position to handle heavy left-handed lineups. But he does have the smoke and, you know, a good enough slider to still get right-handers out consistently. We saw great results when he was up in AAA last year. And I think when you look at a player like this, he kind of fits directly into that Pirates window of this like elite rotation that they could potentially build. And I even think pound for pound, when you think about the body, some of the durability concerns that you might have with a guy like Jared Jones, which I think are totally reasonable. And just even looking at some of the comparable arms to Jones, like a Strider, you know, there's going to be some injuries and some wear and tear and some shutdowns over that period of time. I think that Chandler could really ascend to sort of that number two role behind Skeens in the next couple of years. He's a bigger guy. He's super athletic. He can handle some innings. He's proven that he's been able to do that. I think it's really exciting. I would argue that, you know, this guy is every bit up there with Jackson Job and Roky Sasaki and some of the other Andrew Painter, some of the other top pitching prospects. And that's why he's inside our top 10.
That sounds promising. And also kind of leads me to think about why the Pirates want him to just pitch. But JJ, you can tell us more, as I'm coming in here as the no fun police to try and bring more fun to our sport, which means more two-way sensations. Bubba Chandler can swing the bat. Why can't we see him continue that?
Because unfortunately, we haven't proven that anyone in the U.S. knows how to develop guys like that as pros. I mean, I wish that was the case. It'd be a lot of fun. But Mason Wynn was a two-way guy. And they're like, wait a second, we got to figure out, we can't, how do we get him to pitch and not? Shen Ing Lin, guy to remember, who is kind of still a two-way guy for the Reds now, but he's also, again, kind of coming from Asia. Shohei Ohtani has proven you can do it. But go back to Brendan McKay with the Rays a few years ago, who was a top five pick. And they're like, oh, no, he can hit enough that we're going to use him as a pitcher slash first baseman slash DH. And he broke. He couldn't do it. He could not do both. And it ended up that he could do neither because of it, because he kind of broke down, his shoulder injuries and all. And Brendan McKay's kind of been bouncing around, but nothing like the prospect he was a few years ago. I think we're going to see it with the Royals with Jack Haglione, where we had Jack on the Hot Sheet show a couple weeks ago. And I think we tried to ask every way we possibly could about the two-way, and he really didn't want to answer it, which I think I can translate to the Royals aren't closing the door, but they're really saying, we want you to hit home runs. We don't really necessarily need you to be striking guys out in the later innings. Michael Lorenzen's another guy. There have been guys like this, but it's just really hard to figure out in the U.S. system, how to get a guy to develop as a hitter and a pitcher at the same time. And I really struggle to come up with an example of anyone other than Shohei Ohtani who's pulled it off, Jeff.
Yeah, and there's just not anyone else on earth, or probably since Babe Ruth, who is as dominant on both sides of the ball with those jobs. And I think, you know, that is probably part of the reason that Shohei Ohtani is able to do this for as long as he is, because he is such a good pitcher, maybe one of the top 15 most talented pitchers in the world, while being one of the top five best hitters in the world. We haven't seen anybody else that's been comparable to that, even coming from these American institutions that had track records like Brendan McKay or a guy like Jack Caglianone. Caglianone, it's a bat over pitch profile. He wouldn't have gone in the first round if he was a pitcher. Where we can sort of look at Shohei Ohtani and say pretty easily he would have been the 1-1 pick as a hitter or as a pitcher or as both. It really doesn't matter. And I think it's similar with Bubba, where the bat just wasn't as far along as how special he was as a pitcher. When you're the Pirates, there's probably nothing more valuable than getting really good starting pitching on the cheap and controllable for a couple of years. That it was a prudent decision for the organization, even though it does sort of sap the fun out of a player like Bubba a little bit.
I will point out that Paul Skeens and Jared Jones also were two-way guys. Paul Skeens was a college freshman All-American for us for his catching in DH before he basically went to LSU and moved to the mound full-time. So it's not just him. Like, man, can you imagine Paul Skeens? Paul Skeens really had legit power. It's just hard to pull it off. But the other thing I do think that happens when you have these guys make this transition, Bubba Chandler's talked about it, that he was a two-way guy, which meant he really never kind of had that starting pitcher's mentality, that way of prepping for starts. And so a guy like Bubba kind of needed that transition to, okay, here's how you treat your week. Here's how you treat your days before the start. Here's how you treat your day of the start, because he was a two-way guy before. And so I do think it was useful that he's gotten a chance to kind of get into a regimen, get into a mentality of, here's how I prep to start today. Here's how I go through my entire day to be ready to do this without kind of some of the other stuff like, oh, I need to get some swings in the cage and things like that.
And here, I'll just summarize the conversation about the Pirates, which we can obviously cover on our weekly show more as the season goes on. It's called Hot Sheet. Check it out every Monday live at 3:30 Eastern time. Can the Pirates develop enough to make themselves contenders? Because we know they're not going to get the free agency support. It's just not in their playbook. They do not have permission from ownership to go after players. We talk about this year after year. It doesn't matter if they're in tank mode or right now where they should be in competitive mode. It didn't really change much as far as the final product last year. We'll see what a fresh slate looks like with Skeens at the start of the season. Obviously, this is very exciting to talk about what Bubba can bring to the mix eventually, but it is the lurking question with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Can they do this without adding much around them in Major League Baseball as far as free agent signings? So anyway, if you want to hear more on that, you can definitely check us out on a weekly basis. You can read more in Baseball America, get yourself a subscription. And if you're a fan of another team or just want to hear about other prospects, then just keep rolling here. We'll go team by team on this series.
There are some things that just don't come across on the radar gun or the stat sheet or, you know, the TrackMan device that I think make this guy, you know, a dog.
Let's hit the top prospect for the Cincinnati Reds. The name is Rhett Lauder. It's a prospect profile. Scott Braun, Baseball America's J.J. Cooper, and Jeff Ponce. J.J., the Reds have been trying to stack high-end pitching talent, Rhett Lauder, up next here. What do you think?
I think that they've got another guy knocking on the door here. I'd be shocked. We saw Rhett Lauder at the end of 2024, and I would be shocked if we don't see him produce quality innings for the Reds in 2025, although to the Reds' credit, they've kind of loaded their rotation enough where we'll see, you know, we'll see on opening day or in the lead up to opening day whether he's going to crack that roster, that rotation from day one or get a little bit more seasoning. But this is as we thought when he was coming out of Wake Forest, this is an extremely polished pitcher. And yeah, I almost want to say, like, almost apologize as I lay this out because it's going to sound like I'm kind of damning him with faint praise. And I don't mean it that way. There is no pitch for Rhett Lauder that jumps out as like, oh, that's like a Paul Skeens 80. That's like a Roki Sasaki splitter or anything like that. What really does stand out is just how all this fits together. He's got a good enough, he's got this arsenal pitches that all are kind of like 55s. Maybe it's a 60, maybe it's a plus pitch, an above average pitch if you'll really like it. But the key to all of this is you watch how he pitches. When he's on, and he was on pretty much throughout his little MLB stint at the end of 2024, his command, his control is really advanced. He doesn't miss with bad misses. If he misses, he generally is going to miss in a spot where, okay, ball two, let's do this again. He doesn't miss where it leaks over the middle of the plate and gets crushed. He did that over and over. He's done that kind of going back to his college career at Wake Forest, where if you do remember, he matched Paul Skeens pitch for pitch in Wake Forest versus LSU in one of the greatest College World Series games we'll probably ever see. You put it all together, and I would say that this is more like this is a kind of a sum of the parts guy where maybe the stuff just keeps getting a little bit better. I look at a guy like the path that like Aaron Nola had with the Phillies, where Nola doesn't have blow you away velocity, he doesn't really have blow you away pitches. But it works year after year after year because he really knows how to pitch. He's really durable. He's really smart. That kind of describes Rhett Lauder, I would say, as well. But I will also say, agonized as we did this Reds list, because you could go Rhett Lauder. You could go Chase Burns. By the way, another Wake Forest first-round pick for them, top of the draft. They've done it 2 years in a row here. And Jeff, I think, like, again, I'm going with the guy who's basically big league ready. But I think you could also make the case for Chase Burns, who's yet to really pitch in pro ball. But on the ceiling side, I would 100% agree that if Chase Burns hits his ceiling and Rhett Lauder hits his ceiling, Chase Burns is going to end up being the better pitcher. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, just as the resident stuffist in-house here, meaning I care more about stuff than I do necessarily about
I used to be that guy. You stole that from me.
And pitchability. I would lean on Burns. I think there's maybe some other elements of Burns' profile that we haven't totally seen against high level competition. Some of the talk around him, in the fall and some of the workouts that were happening in Arizona were that he was only throwing with a major league ball. So this could be another player, just like Lauder last year, that we see sort of streamlined right into that big league rotation as early as the end of this season. That being said, I do want to sort of give Brett Lauder his flowers. When you look at execution, when you look at pitchability, and I think you sort of nailed it with the Nola comp of somebody who's going to go in there, they're going to understand their opponents, they're going to understand the spots and the zones that they need to land particular pitches, how they have to sequence certain guys. He's going to do all that work. And sort of dating back to, you know, talking to his former pitching coach, Corey Mascara at Wake Forest, when I was, you know, doing some sort of draft work for us in my early days here at BA, that was something, even as an underclassman, when he pitched here at Boston College, that Corey really called out. This guy just has a very cerebral understanding of pitching, that he doesn't have to have the biggest stuff because he knows how to hit his spots. He knows how to make everything sort of dovetail nicely within his arsenal. So he does execute, he does get those outs, and can get through lineups efficiently without having to just forcibly try to strike everybody out, which I think at times that can be sort of the knock on Burns. So when we compare the two, I think when you're looking at Lauder, he's just a more polished, more major league ready. But that's not to say that he doesn't have upside when he finally does face, you know, major league competition over his 30 plus starts and sort of gets his feet wet and has major league coaching and access to all of the, you know, additional things, nutrition, whatever it might be, that could take his game up another level. I think that you could see that because of the type of sort of individual and makeup that you have with a guy like Lauder. So there are some things that just don't come across on the radar gun or the stat sheet or, you know, the TrackMan device that I think make this guy, you know, a dog.
The things that stand out for me, we saw it last year. Like at the start of the season, Lauder kind of got beat around for the first time, I would say, really, I don't know, maybe in his life, but especially like his first time really as an, you know, high level amateur or as a pro. And he made adjustments. He kind of realized, okay, that four seamer that I've really relied on isn't kind of going to be my my calling card. Got the started using the sinker more. I think that that's one of the things that you're going to be looking at with a guy like Rhett Lauder. And that's what makes kind of projecting pitching so fun, but also so challenging, is what he is right now is what he is right now. We know that he had one of the best strike percentages in the minors last year. He throws a ton of strikes. He can locate. But if you told me that 3-4 years from now, one of his best pitches is a pitch he doesn't throw right now, wouldn't shock me, because I think as he goes through, the hitters are going to show him what he needs to improve, same way that he's going to show hitters what they need to improve at. And it's going to be kind of this point counterpoint. This isn't a guy who's just going to rear back and blow guys away. So if you told me that he's going to tinker, that he's going to add this pitch, maybe it's a cutter this year, or it's a slider that's a little different, or, you know, split, whatever it is, like, I think that he has the way to kind of add, subtract, do different things. And he has the aptitude to do that. We saw that again, to take it to an extreme example, because the guy he faced in Omaha, but we saw that with Paul Skeens last year, who kind of perfected and refined a pitch that he barely threw in college to kind of help, you know, take him to rookie of the year status. If you told me that Rhett Lauder is going to kind of keep tinkering over the next few years, he's smart enough that it would not surprise me at all if he did that.
Yeah. And if you're excited as a Reds fan about the rotation that you have, but you feel like you want a little bit more, especially of top end talent, here, we're talking about Lauder getting you excited, and we're talking about Burns getting you excited. And this helps to tell the story of why the Reds have been going in this direction early in drafts, JJ. They also have trouble, understandably, recruiting pitchers to Cincinnati as free agents.
I will say also, though, if you're a Reds fan and you're saying that, and I'd say, like, well, Hunter Green is kind of like, that's about as high octane as it gets. So, like, you got one. Like, you know, so now we're hoping to add two and three to that. But no, this is what the Reds are doing really well right now. They need help in the lineup. Ellie De La Cruz can't do it all by himself. But if you look at this rotation, it's going to be deeper than five-man deep, a five-man rotation, with guys who should be very plausible starters. Nick Martinez can kind of do whatever they want with him because he can swing back and forth. And then you add, go a year from now, and you add back in a Brandon Williamson and a Julian Aguiar, who kind of fit into that as well as they come back from injury. That the pitching staff-wise, Red's looking up, looking pretty promising right now.
Yeah, it's good news for the long term for this team. So if you want more on the Cincinnati Reds, you can obviously check out Baseball America. Get yourself a subscription if you don't have one already. Subscribe to this YouTube channel. Check us out weekly on our show called Hot Sheet. And we'll keep rolling out top prospects team by team as we go through the offseason here.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.